Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. Thanks for listening to the Patrick Madrid Show. I appreciate it very much. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. You can send me an email too if you want. Just go to relevantradio.com/Patrick and you can send me a note there. Just click on the connect button. 888-914-9149. Here is a note that comes in from K, and I don't, it's just a letter K. And there's no way to know if K is a man or a woman. And maybe K intended it that way, listening in Chicago. And the subject is, don't bring me down. I turned into your show for the first time to hear, I think, you explaining why masturbation outside of marital sexual intercourse. I am shocked. Well, that's not what I was explaining. It had nothing to do with that. This is one of the reasons why it's always good to listen is to the whole thing to get the sense of what's really being said. Many other schools of Catholic ethics have indeed evolved. Sexual ethics are one of the last holdouts, and it seems to me that they can be wielded in such a way as to cause anti-Christian harm to the human person. Just wow. I found listening to your show for 10 minutes terribly sad. Supersessionist about Jewish scriptures biblically as Muslims or Christian scriptures and beliefs by which they mean no harm, but it is quite insulting. And focusing on the wrong parts of being Christian, rules created over time by a human institution rather than the liberating and actually challenging message of the Gospels you said you love, which did not go into the painful detail you are alienating church members with. Just wow.
Oh, Patrick,
I'll pray for you in the church I love.
I can boil this all down for you.
Come on, man.
Well, this is Exhibit A, to use the phrase again. Thanks, Kay. You fulfilled a very important purpose, and that is demonstrating so well what will happen if you tune in and you listen only to part of it and you draw conclusions and leap to unwarranted conclusions as you have here. I think I understand where you're coming from, but... just wow.
Come
Thanks
on,
for
man.
Writing to me. Just give it time, Kay. If you thought that was bad, just keep listening. I expect another email from you in due course, but thank you. I appreciate the fact that you listened even just for 10 minutes. I really do. Thank you. Come on, man.
Come on, man.
What are we talking about?
What are we talking about?
Okay. Cyrus, believe it or not, somebody else wants to talk about the marital act. I know. But this is actually, it's a tangent that's a good one. So this is from Vicky listening on the Relevant Radio app, and she has a very good point. She says, I think our priests need to be educated on this sin. And I'm not sure which sin you have in mind, Vicky, but I'm guessing it's of the Genesis 38 type. I think our priests need to be educated on this sin because I took this to confession, and the priest told me that it was perfectly fine since we were married. I lived in mortal sin for years, she says, because this uninformed priest gave me wrong information. And this is all in caps. Please tell your viewers, they're actually listeners, but it is theater of the mind, so I think I get what you mean. Tell them not to just take what a priest says at face value because you agree with him or he tells you what you want to hear, making your life so much more enjoyable. That is a valid point. Now, I am not here to in any way denigrate or undermine the authority or the ministry of our priests. I'm grateful for them. I'm grateful for the long hours and pouring themselves out like a libation, as St. Paul says, for us. So it's not my place, it's not my intention to undermine in anybody's minds the credibility of Catholic priests. I want to make that perfectly clear. However, you are making a good point insofar as there is a generation of priests who were not properly educated, in my estimation, in the seminaries in the 1960s and 70s, and for some of them even into the 80s. But by then, this problem had tended to be greatly mitigated, and that was that there was a hue and cry that went up among the clergy about the issue of birth control. Now, birth control contraception extends to this particular sin that I think you're referring to. It would be included under that overall penumbra. But there was a great deal of counter information being given to married couples in the 60s and 70s and 80s of priests in the confessionals saying, listen, if you want to practice contraception, if you want to go on the pill, if you want to do this, if you want to do that, that's fine. The church is going to change its teaching anyway. So it's okay. And if in conscience you feel that you can do this, after all, you already have some kids. That was bad information. That was incorrect, erroneous information. And Vicki, what you're referring to here was very widespread for a time in the United States. I know this personally because not only have I run into that myself in conversations with priests, but also I've known and met and talked to countless married couples who over the years got the same kind of very bad advice. And your point is very plaintive in my reading it, and that is, you say you lived in mortal sin for years because this priest had given you the wrong information. Why they did this, I don't know. They wanted to be popular, I guess, or they wanted people to think well of them, and they didn't tell them the truth. So even though we're not discussing that issue per se, what you're bringing up here is an important aspect of that, and I'm glad you brought it up. So my advice would be, everybody listening, be aware of what the church teaches, and you can get virtually all of it in the catechism. And if you don't have a catechism, it's easy to get. It's even online if you want to just access it from your phone. There's really no excuse anymore for people not to be aware of what is in the catechism because it's so prevalent and easily available. So if you feel like Vicki is expressing that you got maybe either some bad advice or you just don't know, you really just don't honestly know what the church teaches on an issue like this, you're going to get it in the catechism. You're also going to get it here on Relevant Radio, because although we don't talk about this topic very much outside of the last week or two, it is something that if you have a question about, you're going to get a straight and an answer that is faithful to what the church teaches. That's what we seek to do here. And thanks for that. 888-914-9149. Jordan sent me a note. He's listening on the Relevant Radio app, and he says, I'm wondering if you have any tips or advice for hosting a priest for dinner. Thank you. Well, I guess the main tip would be feed him well, you know, make a conscious effort to do something pleasant for the priest. You know, a nice meal is always great if he likes wine, or if he likes, you know, whatever it is that he likes, maybe do something nice like that. It's a gesture of kindness for him. And then my other suggestion would be, while he's at your house, ask him to bless your home. Ask him to go room to room with a vial of holy water, and maybe you could tell him ahead of time, and ask him to bless your whole house, and he'll gladly do it. And then if you have images of the Sacred Heart of Jesus and the Immaculate Heart of Mary, it would be a good idea to ask him to solemnly enthrone those images in your home, and he'll be happy to do that as well. Thank you. 888-914-9149. How about Jonathan in Clarendon Hills, Illinois? Hello, Jonathan.
Hi, Patrick. Just a quick question for you. I'm a doctor, and I often find myself by nature of my job at the bedside of people who are dying. Mm-hmm. And I often will say a Hail Holy Queen for them. Is there perhaps a more appropriate prayer for them?
Well, it's a beautiful prayer. I myself think that the Divine Mercy Chaplet is a great prayer. In fact, Our Lady said so to St. Faustina, that praying, and Jesus too, said that praying the Divine Mercy Chaplet with the person or even just in the person's presence can unleash tremendous graces of conversion and graces for that person who's dying. So I don't know if time is a consideration. You may not have time to do all that. But even if it's just, you know, for the sake of His sorrowful passion, have mercy on us and on the whole world, it's something even as simple as that, I think, would be a good thing. And you could teach the patient to pray that as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, I mean, there are many different answers I could give you, but that comes to mind as maybe among the simplest. Thank you, Jonathan. I appreciate that. Let's go to John now in Newtown Square, Pennsylvania. Hello, John.
Good morning, Patrick. My question is, when praying the rosary, specifically, I believe it's the third joyful mystery, the birth of Jesus, mm-hmm. The fruit of the mystery is poverty in spirit. And I'm having a hard time understanding what that means.
Okay. Well, I am not a spiritual master, but having read some of the commentaries on this topic, here's how I understand it. That poverty of spirit means that regardless of what your circumstances are materially, whether you are wealthy or middle class or poor or whatever your station in life is in a socioeconomic way, if you are free of undue attachments to your possessions and your money, that's what I understand to be poverty of spirit. In other words, you have a simplicity that is, you're joyful and satisfied with what you have, and you're not ruled by your possessions. So you have a freedom from your possessions. And if you think about it, consider how many people who have a lot, or they have a lot of money, how it rules them and it makes them really anxious and concerned. How do I keep my money? How do I grow my money? And if they're not careful, it could become a kind of false god, and often does become a kind of false god. So the poverty of spirit is that you are poor in that you don't have to have all those things, and you're also making use of them in a good way, a godly way. So whether you have a lot or a little, you're content, you're satisfied, and you're not ruled by those things. That's how I understand it.
Okay, that sounds great. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome, John. And for that matter, the scripture scholars, I am not a scripture scholar, but those who are scripture scholars, up to and including the church fathers, have a lot to say on all of these things. So by all means, consult those commentaries to get an even deeper sense of what these passages mean. Let's go to Renee now in Rock City, Illinois. Are you ready to rock? Hi, Renee.
Hi, Patrick.
Hi, Renee.
I recently had a friend who lost her mom, and she had lost her dad years ago. And I was talking with another friend about, and I guess she was asking how, if they are going to be reunited in heaven. And I didn't know how to answer it. Mm-hmm. I kind of gave like a, you know, I don't think it's about us, it's more about God kind of an answer, but I just thought maybe I would get your take on it.
Sure. Well, we know that Jesus said that in heaven there will be no marriage or giving in marriage, but we will be like the angels. Now, it doesn't mean, I don't think it means, that you won't still have a recognition of each other as once having been married, or that you won't have in a certain way, a kind of spousal relationship, even though the sacrament of holy matrimony ends at death. That's why we say till death do us part. But the reason I have this intuition, Renee, even though that we won't be living as man and wife in heaven, we won't be living as couples or going around heaven as couples, there will be no need for that because we will see God as he is. He will be the ultimate fulfillment of those things that in marriage are only symbolized and in a very shadowy sort of way represented. But in heaven, we will have the absolute maximum bliss that anything less than that, of course, would be superfluous. There will be no procreation in heaven, obviously. We will be like the angels. We don't become angels. We remain human beings, but the angels don't procreate. They don't have bodies for that matter, but they don't procreate. God creates them. So in this way, as the Lord is speaking, I think what we can still say is, although those things, the way we know them in this life, in terms of marriage and living together and child rearing and things, those won't be present in heaven. Nonetheless, I do believe that there will still be some form of a relationship that we had in this life that will be preserved in the life to come for this reason. You know how when you go to adoration and there's benediction of the Blessed Sacrament, and you know when we sing the mm-hmm. divine praises, blessed be God, blessed be his holy name. As you get down to the end of that, it says, blessed be Saint Joseph, her most chaste spouse. This is referring to the Blessed Virgin Mary, obviously. Blessed be Saint Joseph, her most chaste spouse. It doesn't say that blessed be Joseph, who used to be her most chaste spouse. He still is Our Lady's most chaste spouse. So I draw from that a kind of intuition that in the wisdom of the church's prayers, that being one of them, that there's a glimmer of this reality that just as St. Joseph is still, in a very true sense, the spouse of the Blessed Virgin Mary, even though they're in heaven, even though they see God face to face, and yet there is still this relationship that the church still venerates. And we wouldn't venerate it if it weren't, you know, if it weren't the case. So I don't want to lean too heavily on that because I don't think that in itself is a proof, but it's an intuition that I have that, to answer your question, that if you're married validly and certainly sacramentally in this life, that somehow in some way that will be retained, but not in the way that we know it in this life. What do you think?
I think that's a good answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I really appreciate your ministry, and thank you to you and Cyrus.
Thank you. Very kind of you. We appreciate that. Let's go to Tim now in, is it DeBerry, Florida? DeBerry or DeBerry, Florida? One way or the other. Welcome, Tim.
Thank you, Patrick. My question is why do we have so much money involved with our churches, such as the gold and marble, art, all that, but yet there's people that are hungry and starving and homeless. Mm-hmm. And we're not, I mean, I look at it like this. What would Jesus say if we said, hey, we're going to build you this great house so we could worship you and everything, but we're also going to, I guess to put it bluntly, ignore, or we're not going to give to these, the homeless or the hungry, you know, you see what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. So what the problem here, Tim, and I understand your question, the problem is a false dichotomy. So the way you're framing this, and perhaps it's in your own mind, you're framing it this way, that either the church has these magnificent buildings and all the magnificent things in the buildings, or the church helps the poor. But those are not mutually exclusive. And it's not the options that you gave are not the actual options. So I would put it this way. Keep in mind, number one, that the Catholic Church globally and really everywhere you go is at the forefront of taking care of poor people and has been for 2,000 years, feeding the hungry, clothing the naked, sheltering those who need shelter, free medical care, soup kitchens, orphanages, free education. I mean, it's a very long list. And the Catholic Church all over the world, in your backyard and all over the world, is doing this on a daily basis, consistently doing this. Now, does that mean that we're better than other people? No, it doesn't mean anything. It just means that the Catholic Church takes seriously the need to take care of the poor and people in other ways who are disadvantaged. And we do that 24/7 and have been for the last 2,000 years. So that's why I say it's a false dichotomy, because the way you're asking the question suggests that the church isn't doing any of that because it's so busy building these beautiful churches, and it could be using that money to help the poor. Vast amounts of Catholic monies are going every day to helping the poor, far more so, I would argue, than any other governmental agency or other groups as well. It's just because the Catholic Church is so big and it's global, it has that effect. Now, another thing to point out is that these Catholic churches, for example, are adorned and made beautiful, and that costs money, as a way to honor God. Now, think about, you ask, what would Jesus do? Well, we know what Jesus did. Jesus worshiped in the temple in Jerusalem. That was about as magnificent and well-adorned and richly appointed as any structure could be. And he went there and prayed there and worshiped there and taught there. And we know what Jesus would do. He approved of it. He was at home there. And so we can look there. We can also look in the book of Numbers, for example, and in other passages of the Old Testament where the temple in all of its adornments, as it had been constructed by Solomon, was approved by God, and how God himself blessed the temple and all these beautiful things that were in it because it was done to honor him. And then lastly, Tim, I do have to take a break, so forgive my having to cut this call short, but I have to take a break. The last thing is, what about you? I mean, what about your car? How come you haven't sold it to help the poor? I'm assuming you live in a house and you probably have a nice television or you have a few nice things in your home. How come you haven't liquidated all of those things to feed the poor? That's a question to ask yourself. And I think the answer would be because you do try to help the poor people. You do the best you can. Maybe you could do better, but you do something. And at the same time, there's nothing wrong with you having a television set in your home or having a home at all. So it's not an either or mutually exclusive situation. And with that, I'll have to leave it because I have to take a break. Thank you, Tim. Call me another time. I'd love to talk to you again. I'll be right back with more right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Welcome back. Cyrus, you are probably, I don't know, are you like a big digital Bitcoin guy, digital currency? Are you into all that stuff?
No, I don't have any. I did not get rich or poor off of Bitcoin.
And it went both ways for a lot of people, didn't it?
It certainly did.
They made a lot of money and then they lost a lot of money. So who knows what's going on with all that? I don't claim to really fully understand blockchain and all that stuff. However, we have a little bit of audio I'd like to share. And this is the one, Cyrus, about digital banking, central banking digital currencies, which is really becoming much more of a systemic thing to the exclusion of cash in due time, and what that would mean for you as a person. We have some commentary from a financial expert on this issue, and I think we have that audio ready, don't we?
Yeah, this is really interesting, and something that you can see that's happening in China right now. And us,
it's coming here.
Yes, Americans are like, no, not here, not here. Well,
like COVID.
Like it's...
It'll never come here. It's going to stay over there in China. That social credit score we've talked about many times on the program, where if you get out of line, then suddenly now you can't do certain things because the government says you can't. And your social credit score, there was an episode on this topic on the TV series Black Mirror. Maybe you saw it. And this is real, and it's really unfolding here in these United States right now. So let's roll that audio, Cyrus, so people can hear what's happening in the background here.
You might be thinking that this kind of authoritarian control over your money is not going to be anything that we'll see in the future. Unfortunately, this is already implemented in the world. In China, the government is already able to program what its citizens can and cannot spend their money on. Over the last few years, they've limited millions of people's ability to buy things like train tickets, passports, and luxury goods. They're able to do this because of China's intense social credit system that links each person's identity and actions to their bank account, allowing the government to see and to control everything a citizen does with their money. And it seems like the West is paying attention. In nations like Sweden, South Africa, and Canada, trials of programmable central bank currencies are already underway. In fact, almost half of the world's nations are at some stage of implementing this kind of programmable money, meaning no matter where in the world you live, this technology is likely only a few years away. Okay, so how does programmable money tie in with the personal carbon limit? Well, it all comes down to whether or not you've gone over your monthly usage. And if you have, there are two possible case scenarios for that. The most openly talked about penalty for a person going over their individual carbon limit is that they'd simply get charged for doing so. Just the same as what happens to large companies today, taking too many car trips this month or bought a little bit too much meat. In that case, you'd simply get a bill at the end of each month from your government so you can pay the price of being a naughty citizen. As your entire carbon usage would be tracked by a government CBDC, there would be no way to hide how much carbon you've used. And since they now also hold the keys to your money, they won't even need to send you a bill for your excess usage. Potentially, they'll just automatically pull your fine from your bank account.
How convenient.
Yeah, I mean, the world as we once knew it is fading away. You know, it's so different now than it was before. So I don't know how long a cash economy is likely to last. I'm guessing probably not that much longer. And for you to have cash on hand that makes you untrackable or untraceable, your transactions in cash, I mean, they're by necessity, they're not traceable. When that disappears and you have wrong thoughts or you express skepticism, for example, about certain things that the government may be telling you that you have to believe, because of course all the smart people and all the good-looking people and all the good people, they believe this, so don't you want to be one of them? And if you express a view like, I don't know, how about traditional marriage? I believe in marriage as being one man and one woman. Nothing else fits into that paradigm. That's a bad thought. That's a wrong thought, according to many today. And they don't really have the means to punish you yet. I mean, they can in certain clumsy sort of ways, like the FBI breaking into your house and raiding your house at gunpoint with your seven children screaming in terror just because you are a pro-life counselor in front of an abortion clinic. And you know the story. We talked about that. I mean, they have clumsy, heavy-handed ways of dealing with people who get out of line like that. But at the point that this lady's talking about, where everything you say or do is monitored and it's connected to your bank account, your social credit score, they just flip a switch. I'm sorry. No money for you. I'm sorry. You don't get to buy that. Well, why? That guy's buying it. How come I can't? Well, because you have these wrong thoughts. If you stop with the wrong thoughts, maybe we'll, you know, give you your money back, or we'll allow you to buy that train ticket or what have you. Things are moving in this direction. Now, I'm not saying this to be an alarmist. I think it's past that point of being an alarmist. I mean, things are what they are, and we're moving in this direction already. So it seems to me that the best thing to do, if you are paying attention to this, and of course you are because you're listening to this program, would be to act accordingly. You know, maybe, what did Jesus say? He said, be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. What does that mean exactly? Well, you have to be clever. You have to be circumspect, but you also have to be clever and creative as the times call for it. Not deceptive. I don't mean that Jesus is saying that you should become like people on the other side are, but to be wise and prudent, to know what's the right thing to do in a given situation. You may say, well, what are you talking about? Well, for example, perhaps you should be really carefully thinking about what you put on your Facebook page. Not that you want to stop speaking the truth in love. I don't mean that. But if you don't want repercussions coming down on your head at some point in the future, be thinking about, is it wise for me to say and do something like this? I'm not trying to suggest that you go silent, but be, as Jesus said, wise as serpents and harmless as doves. I'm thinking also of that reading that we just had, not yesterday, but I think it was the Sunday before, the gospel reading where Jesus talks about the wily servant. Remember this one? Where he realizes he's going to get fired. And he's like the manager of all of the accounts that the master owns. People who owe him money, and they owe him commodities. They owe him things. And so this devious clerk, this devious office manager, he knows he's going to get canned. So he goes to all of the different people that owe the master money, and he tells them to rewrite their invoices for a lower amount. In other words, he's committing fraud because he knows that if he can make friends with this person and he can get that person a better deal, even though it defrauds the master of what's rightfully owed to him, then he would be a friend. He's more likely to be helped out by that person after the fact. And what's interesting and what's enigmatic about this passage is that Jesus says that you should make friends with unrighteous mammon. And it seems like it seems very difficult to understand. And what Jesus is doing there is he's making an a fortiori argument where he says, look, if this corrupt and devious manager, if he is smart enough to kind of set things up so that after he gets fired, he's not going to have to dig a ditch because he says, I'm too proud to beg and I'm not able to dig like a laborer. If he's smart enough to set things up so that he himself will not suffer unduly, how much more so should you be prepared for eventualities that are not earthly but heavenly? And so when he talks about making friends with heaven, with unrighteous mammon, and mammon does not just mean money. It does mean money, but it extends to more than just money. It means things in general, your wealth, things you've accumulated, but primarily money. What Jesus means by that is give alms. Take the money that you have and give alms. And when he says make friends by that, what he's talking about in a rather oblique sort of way is you'll be laying up for yourself treasure in heaven because you will be repositioning, repurposing the money and the stuff that you have, and you'll be doing it, unlike the devious servant, you'll be doing it for a godly purpose, which is to help poor people, to help fund soup kitchens or homes for unwed mothers or orphanages, etc. And so what he's saying is make use of your money in a way that will put you in a good position after the fact, later on, treasure in heaven kind of thing. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Shelley now in Orlando. Shelley, I have to ask you, the question that's on everybody's mind is, how did you fare in Orlando during the hurricane? Was there a lot of damage where you are?
Yes, there's a lot of flooding. We had trees down. Mm-hmm. My daughter may have lost her job because of the flooding.
Oh, boy.
She works at a nursing home, and it was 5 feet of water, and they had to evacuate them.
Oh, my.
My question is, I converted to Catholicism about 6 years ago.
Welcome
after
home.
My RCI, yes. After a long spiritual journey, I'm in my 50s. It took a minute. but after my RCIA classes, I kind of felt like the teaching stopped. Mm-hmm. My question is, where do I go to get deeper in my faith? I was working on my study Bible that I just ordered. Mm-hmm. And I'm setting it up because, in the hurricane, there's not much to do.
Okay.
And the Bible was comforting. But what I'm homebound because I just had knee surgery on the 15th. Mm, so getting to Mass is a bit tough.
Yeah.
What would you recommend, books or otherwise, to go deeper into my faith? I mean, I love the internet, but sometimes it confuses me more than it helps me.
Got it. Well, and I mean this with absolute sincerity, one thing I would recommend you're doing right now, which is to stay plugged in with us here at Relevant Radio, because every day, 24/7, and I guess all the more so because you're homebound, you're going to be able to hear a continuous stream of teaching about the Bible, about Jesus, about the church, and many other things besides. So the very first and best thing that I could suggest to you, you're already doing. So my encouragement would be keep doing that, number one. Keep doing what you're doing. Stay plugged in with Relevant Radio because you're going to get what you're looking for. Now, there are other things you can do, of course. I wrote a book for people in your very situation. It's called Now What? And it's a guide for the new and the not-so-new Catholic. And the purpose of writing that book, the purpose of writing that book is to say, all right, you have become a Catholic. Now what? How do you be Catholic? So I look at the question in two ways throughout this book. Number one is, what does it mean to be Catholic? And what does it mean to be Catholic? Those are two distinct questions phrased in the same words. So to be Catholic would be things like your sacramental life, your life at the parish. I realize that right now it's not really easy for you just because of circumstances, and hopefully that'll change soon. But in the meantime, how do you stay plugged in with your parish? How do you live a sacramental life and all of those things? It also extends in the book to things like how to understand what it is that we do in the Catholic Church, even down to some of the things that look odd or difficult to understand for people, like why do you stand and sit and stand and sit, kneel and sit and stand at Mass? What is the purpose of that? What about the church's liturgical calendar and all of the above? So then on the other side of the coin is, what does it mean to be Catholic? that goes, of course, beyond customs and rituals and things like that into what does it mean to be a follower of Jesus Christ and enter into the church as you did that Jesus established. What does that mean exactly? And what are the teachings that go along with that? So if you're thinking about a book to start, I mean, I wrote that book with you in mind, Shelley. It's called Now What?
Thank you.
And yeah, you can get it. I mean, I'm guessing that the Catholic bookstores took a real beating in Orlando. So I don't know if they're even open right now, but you can still acquire that book online.
I will say a lot of them have closed due to the COVID.
Yeah.
And economic, and now hurricane did not help, but I'm going to definitely hit the internet.
Okay.
And get it. Also, I try to check it out my local library. I have found that they don't have a big selection. Mm-hmm. As you said.
Yeah, maybe you can enrich their selection by donating a copy of some of these good books you'll be reading. I also want to recommend you get a copy of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. That's indispensable. So if you want to really assimilate what the church teaches, that mm-hmm. is probably the single, aside from the Bible, of course, that's the single greatest source of information for you as a Catholic. And there's really no, I'm sorry?
I said, I have that one. That was a gift to me by my sponsor when I
Oh, wonderful.
Through.
That's great. Well, that's another important thing. So it sounds like you've got most of your bases covered. Keep listening to Relevant Radio. We're here for you, and we can be a lifeline for you on a daily basis. So please do that. If you're interested in that book I mentioned, it's called Now What? A Guide for New and Not So New Catholics. That gets right to the heart of the question you're asking. And then you've got the Catechism. So you're well set, Shelley. And just keep on keeping on. Keep doing what you're doing. And call me again. You know, maybe after things settle down a little bit and get back to normal, give me a call back and we'll do a check-in and see how things are going. Thank you. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Great song by the Eagles. If you're a bass player or you like bass playing, check it out. This is Randy Meisner playing the bass on this song. And on the interwebs, you go on the YouTubes and put in Already Gone Eagles isolated bass, and you'll hear just the bass from this song. It's really good, very tasty, and I've always liked Randy Meisner's bass playing. All right, 888-914-9149. Note came in a moment ago from Kathy, and she's listening on the Relevant Radio app, and she says, Patrick, I love your show, and I listen all the time. You and Cyrus crack me up. I was just listening to your call from Vicky, and she was talking about the fact that she was living in mortal sin for years because of what a priest told her regarding the sin of Onan. Would you please remind us all that it takes three conditions to be in mortal sin, and if she was in ignorance during that time, it was not a mortal sin for her. Thank you for keeping us all on our toes. God bless you all. P.S. When I can't sleep at night, I turn on your podcast, and your soothing, calming voice puts me right back to sleep. I don't know if that's good or bad, but I appreciate it. I think it's probably good in that situation. Thanks for being there for me. Well, you got it, Kathy, and thank you for your note. So a few thoughts about that. Number one, you're kind of right, but not entirely right. So let me try to clarify. When we consider sin, when you consider sin, you have to see it from two vantage points. You're seeing the same thing, but you're looking at it from two perspectives. One is the thing itself, the sin itself, and is the act in itself a sin? And the way a moral theologian might explain it is that you have to consider the object of the act or the act itself, your intention, and the circumstances. And so from those sources or fonts of a human act, you can determine whether or not an act is moral or immoral or neutral. It could be neither moral or immoral. It could just be something that doesn't have any moral weight to it. So objectively, Vicky was right. Objectively, she was living in the state of mortal sin, because the thing itself that she was referring to, even though she did not have a clear understanding that this was a sin, from an objective standpoint, it was a mortal sin, and she was living in mortal sin. But the other perspective to keep in mind is what we would call subjective, or to use a different set of words, an act can be materially mortally sinful, and it can also be formally mortally sinful. And the formal part has to do with your intention, your knowledge, or the subjective quality of it. So from a subjective standpoint, if you were truly ignorant that this activity was a sin, well, your culpability could be greatly diminished, but not necessarily entirely diminished. And that would be a question that only God himself could answer. You know, to what extent, even at some place back in your mind, at some level in your conscience, that there was something maybe bothering you about this, or this doesn't seem right, or, I mean, there are degrees of culpability. And I don't want to go so far as to say that somebody could be completely not culpable, although that's possible. The point is that she was correct in saying that she was living in mortal sin as an objective fact. That is true. But to your point, and you're correct in this side of it, that if you were truly ignorant, then from that formal standpoint, you would not be guilty, or at least not anywhere near as guilty as you would have been if you knew that this was wrong and you did it anyway. So I hear what you're saying, and you're right, but I'm glad you brought this up, because it does require maybe a tad more of clarification. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Doris in North Providence, Rhode Island. Good morning, Doris. Hello, Doris. Welcome. I don't know if Hello Doris there. Is ready. Do you have a bad feeling about this?
Bueller. Bueller.
Okay. I have an idea. Let's circle back to Doris, and we'll take a few other phone calls. We'll see if we can't get Doris sorted out. We'll come back to Doris. Let's go to Rose now in Pittsburgh. Hello, Rose. Thank you for waiting.
Hello, Rose. I mean, Patrick, how are you?
I am well. Welcome.
Thank you. I've been trying to find literature, and I'm getting mixed messages about the SSPX masses and churches. Are they in communion with the Holy See? Are they not? The only consistent thing that I found was that the priests are ordained and their true ordination is of the priest. But if they perform sacraments or perform mass, would a practicing Catholic like myself, would that be valid for our Sunday Holy Day of Obligation? Can you just give more information about that?
I'll do my best. It's a vexing topic for sure. And this is something that even canon lawyers among themselves dispute. What is their actual status? I'm not even sure what the right word is. I mean, some people talk about perfect communion with the church. I don't even know if that's an apt phrase. But their situation, let's put it this way, is irregular. They acknowledge the Pope as the Pope. They acknowledge the validity of the new Mass, even though they strongly, strongly, strongly dislike it, and they won't celebrate it. Okay. They don't fit within the lawful authority structure of the church. In other words, that an SSPX chapel in your area, say Pittsburgh, does not see itself as under the jurisdiction of the Bishop of Pittsburgh, Bishop Zubik. So the SSPX priests, they wouldn't care what Bishop Zubik had to say one way or the other, and they certainly don't look to him for their authority delegated to them. So it's, at the very least, it's just a strange situation. It's irregular, and I don't even know what the right words are to describe it, other than it's unresolved. Now, when the break first took place, Archbishop Lefebvre ordaining the four priests that he had, consecrating them as bishops, the four priests that he had ordained as bishops to perpetuate the SSPX so that future bishops or these men could in the future ordain more priests and theoretically at least consecrate more bishops, That was an illicit act that was condemned by Pope John Paul II. And he wrote a very stern letter about this called Ecclesia Adflicta, and Ecclesia Dei Adflicta, rather. And he said that by doing this, that Archbishop Lefebvre and the four men that he consecrated as bishops were automatically excommunicated. Now, that excommunication was lifted many years later. But it caused this big question mark. Well, if they're excommunicated and their sacraments, at least some of them, would be invalid, not all of them. So valid baptisms, for example, valid Holy Eucharist, it would be illicit at that time, at least, for them to celebrate Mass, but it was still valid. And so this has just been this ongoing question mark, and it has never really been resolved. A few things have happened. So in recent years, Pope Francis extended the faculties to the Society of St. Pius X priests to hear confessions. This is during the Year of Mercy, you may remember. And those faculties have not been withdrawn. So prior to that point, I think the question was a really important one, and that is that would the sacrament of confession, as in an attempt to confer that sacrament by an SSPX priest, would that have been valid? Well, the church's law says that it's invalid without the delegated authority, or what the church calls faculties, given by the bishop to a priest. So if I remember one time, just not to take too much of a tangent here, but I remember one time I went to confession to a visiting priest, and this is many, 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 many years ago. And I went through my whole confession, got everything out there, and it was just jaw-dropping for me when the priest said, "Oh, I forgot, I can't give you absolution." And I said, "Well, why not?" He said, "Because I'm just visiting and I don't have faculties to hear confessions in this diocese. So it would be invalid if I tried to do that." And I never even heard about such a thing. And it wasn't a pleasant moment for me. But in any case, that's one of the church's laws with regard to the validity of the sacrament of confession. The priest has to have faculties. Now, this is outside of some, you know, extreme emergency situation. So in an extreme emergency, somebody is dying or about to die, the priest can hear a confession anywhere. It doesn't matter whether or not he has faculties. But this is not one of those situations. So the best I can do to tell you, Rose, is that personally, although I am in some ways, not all, sympathetic to some of the goals and some of the sensibilities that people in the SSPX movement have, I don't share all of those things, but some of them I do. And I do, of course, appreciate their love for the traditional Latin Mass, as I love it as well. But nonetheless, I would not recommend it. I don't recommend that you or other faithful Catholics go to the SSPX chapels, first of all, because of this irregular situation. Secondly, because historically, at least, their attitude toward basically everybody else is one of disdain and even contempt. And that is not a proper atmosphere, in my view, for having a healthy Christian life that is based upon charity. And I realize that they see things very differently than I do, but personally, I find that atmosphere to be stultifying and toxic even. So I don't recommend it, and I would actively discourage Catholics from going in that direction. Now, lastly, I'd like to give Father John Zuhlsdorf the last word on this issue, Rose. He goes by the handle Father Z online. And if you go to his blog, just look up Father Z, you'll find his blog. It's called What Does the Prayer Really Say? And it actually is the first letters from each of those words, wdtprs.com. He has a very thoughtful and rather lengthy article in which he breaks down all of these issues. What about going to confession to the SSPX? What about going to Mass? Does that fulfill your Sunday obligation? And I think it's very balanced and helpful. So I posted a link to it on Twitter. And what I'll do, Rose, when this break that's coming up in just a moment, I will locate that on Twitter and I'll retweet it so that you can find it at the top of my Twitter feed. That's at Patrick Madrid. So that'll make it as easy as possible for you to read that article by Father Z. How does that sound?
Awesome. Thank you. I appreciate it. I come from an Eastern Catholic background and my sacraments mm-hmm. are Eastern Catholic. And just reading more about traditional Latin Mass, because it was never with the Eastern Catholics. Mm-hmm. We never had this Latin and Novus Ordo. And I just didn't realize how much, I don't know what the right word is, controversy mm-hmm. that the Second Vatican Council caused within the Catholic Church, and how much of these groups and people that have broken off and really want to go back to it. And I think there is a beauty about the Latin Mass. I'm not against it, but I was kind of ignorant.
It is beautiful.
It just wasn't in my experience. Yeah.
It is beautiful. If you go to a website that I'm going to give you, and wouldn't you know, I'm having trouble finding it right now, but it is called, it's Sancta Missa. S-A-N-C-T-A, Misa, M-I-S-S-A, that means the Holy Mass, sanctamisa.org, will give you kind of a crash course on the traditional Latin Mass, something that you never had a chance mm-hmm. to experience. So that would be a good place to go to get some information. It was until fairly recently, the trajectory of the Church was to move back to more of an embrace of the traditional Latin Mass. Certainly Pope Benedict XVI was actively promoting that, and that was the future of the Church. But things have changed in recent years, and things are moving backward in a sense. So we'll see what happens. But this is the Church's mm-hmm. life and part of the Church's patrimony, and you have a right to know about it and to value it and love it and experience it. So check out that website.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome. And what I'm going to do, once again, I'm going to, when we go to the break, which is right now, I'm going to find that retweet that I did of Father John Zuhlsdorf's commentary on the SSPX and what you can and can't do. Even though I don't recommend it, there are certain things that are open to you, and he explains what they are. So I'll leave it to him to do that. I'll be right back with hour 3 of the program right after this, so please stay right there.